evening, I would like to talk about contact and feeling, and also and creative engagement. Because it seems to me that when we practice awareness meditation, this is really something that we can experience and see for ourselves. And to me, this is actually where trouble can arise. This is where suffering can arise, is when there is contact. And then generally from this contact, there is a feeling, this is good, this is not so good. And then from that, a kind of a lot of things kind of follow on. So I think this is, in a way, in meditation, so very much the meditation is not to be above what is going on, nor is it to be kind of just aware in this kind of bare way, but very much in a way which I would say is creatively engaged with what we come in contact with. So we're in contact with something and we engage creatively in that moment. But a lot of the time, when there is contact and then feeling, then this is a question. Are we grasping or not? Because if we grasp, it will be very different than if we do not grasp. To me, there seems to be a great difference between grasping upon contact or creatively engaging upon contact. And so I would say that in a way, the process of meditation is a process of de-grasping, of releasing. And that's why for me this effect is so important. The fact that this fixation we have, the tension we have, can be released through this concentration and experiential inquiry. And so I would say it seems to me that suffering arises upon the contact and the feeling and the grasping to that. But I think what is very important is when I talk about grasping, there is the same thing happening when we reject something. That we grasp at something because we like it, or that we reject something because we don't like it, the process is the same. The same problem ensues. I think it's very important. When I talk of grasping, it's not just positive. What I like, what I want, what I desire. We do exactly the same thing, and exactly the same process happens when we push away, when we reject. This is, in a way, grasping in reverse. And it has, in a way, the same associated difficulty. So I think there is a mechanism, there is a process of grasping. And I'm going to first demonstrate it with an image. So, let's say that this is very precious to me. This is gold or diamond, or this is the greatest truth in the universe. And I have got it. Because I have got it, it is mine. I hold on to it. So, if I do this, for any length of time, two things happen. The first one, I get a cramp in the arm. So whenever there is grasping, there is tension. But I think that's why a lot of the time we feel stress, because of the tension of grasping at something. But worse than that, if I do this, something else happens. If I do this, I cannot use my hand. So I am limited by what I grasp at. This is very important. This, I think, is the main problem with grasping. If I do this, I cannot use my hand. Then I grasp at something else with my other hand. Then with the feet. Then I am stuck. So basically, I am stuck to what I am grasping at. And so you would say, what is the solution? One solution could be to cut the hand. But this, I think, is a little drastic. But this is a little asceticism, is a bit like this. Next solution, I get rid of the object to what I grasp at. But I don't think the object is a problem. The object is not saying, come, grasp at me, you really want me. I mean, advertisements tell you that, but the object doesn't say anything. The object is just there. And it's us who say, wow, I want this. So anyway, getting rid of the object is not really a solution either. And it seems to me that what meditation does is, in a way, release that grasping. So then, there is movement, there is possibility of movement. Can be taken, can be used, there is movement. And I think, in a way, when we meditate, that's what we do. We disgrasp, we open our hands. So then we can creatively engage with what we encounter instead of grasp and reduce ourselves to what we encounter. So I think what happens is that first, for grasping, the grasping mechanism, there is identification. That comes together. You grasp because you identify. I have this thing, I have this problem, I have this feeling, my thought, whatever it is. So there is identification, and through this identification, there is solidification. And then there is isolation. Then from that you have limitation and reduction, and then, and this is what is the greatest trouble, you have magnification to what you grasp at. This, I think, is generally, with grasping, generally two things happen. Exaggeration and proliferation. This is, I think, the two big problems. That when we grasp or we reject, we exaggerate either the goodness or the badness. And at the same time, we proliferate in an abstracted manner about the thing we grasp at, which then takes us away from the full flow of condition in this moment.
What is the meaning of proliferation?
Proliferation is when, you know, you have a little sensation in the, you have pain in the knee. I have this pain in the knee. Oh, this is terrible. I will never walk again. Yes, and I have to go on holiday. How am I going to go on my holiday if I cannot walk again? So you start from one sensation. Proliferation is when you augment. You go on and on and on. How do you say in a... Maybe both. So proliferation is when you augment. You don't stay with the thing as it is. You augment, you go into what I would call abstraction, because you're not with the thing as it is in this moment. You go on and on somewhere else. But I'll explain more. So, in a way, to see that when we grasp at anything, we reduce our creative potential. Because when we grasp at anything, we reduce ourselves to what we grasp at. And that's why we feel so, when we grasp at something, it's very painful. Because we just become one thought, one feeling, one problem, one condition, one situation. Forgetting that actually there is much more complex condition in our experience in this moment. I think it's very important to see that we do this. So what I like to do now is to look at contact in experience. How are we in contact? We are first in contact through the eyes. We have eyes, we come into contact with visual objects. And anyway, what do? When we see something, can we just see as it is, or do we do something else? And I remember I was on a month's retreat, myself and other teacher, we decided to do a retreat all together. And I was working in the kitchen every morning, and I cannot eat peppers. bell peppers. Like I see Israeli really love peppers. You have pepper for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, it said. So I cannot eat them whatsoever. But maybe possibly the cook was Israeli, I don't know. But every morning, because I was chopping vegetables, I had a pile of peppers. You know, like green, blue, no, not blue, yellow, or red. But there was lots of them. Every day I had this pile of peppers to cut. And I thought, you know, I have this visual contact. I go into the kitchen and every day there is this pile of something I cannot eat. And I thought, how can I creatively engage with this? And I thought the way to do it was to see the peppers like clouds in the sky, just passing through my vision. And I realized that if I grasped at them, then they would become like they would fall onto the back of a hedgehog. You know what a hedgehog is? Porcupine? It's an animal which has... Okay? And so, in a way, if the pepper would fall metaphorically on a hedgehog, they would rot. Would not they? Not the pepper. On top of the hedgehog. So I thought it seems to me made more sense to see them like clouds through the sky, just passing through. And to me this is what creative engagement is. You see something, and I chop them, and they pass. I encountered them, and they pass. And I did not have to eat them. Another thing during this retreat, it was in Northern America, and it was winter, and I would walk in the snow. And there were these beautiful trees, which were very beautiful, with no leaves, but they had these beautiful trunks. They're white, they're beautiful trees, which we don't have in France like that. So I would go and walk, and then I would see, and would just be in front, stay in front of the tree, and just look at the trunk, the whiteness, the uprightness. And I would see how long I could be creatively engaged to just see it as it was, and then I would see the proliferation. Would not it be nice to have such a tree in my garden? Yes, in Bordeaux there is a place where maybe I could buy this tree. And when I went that way, I was not in front of the tree anymore. I was physically in front of it, but I was away from it. And then I would bring myself back. So this is what I mean by creative engagement, is you see the thing, you're present to it, but you don't exaggerate, you don't proliferate, you encounter as it is, and when it moves, when you move, then it's not there anymore. You don't grasp at it, or you don't reject it. But what is interesting with visual contact is that often we grasp at what is not there. And you see, I think it's relatively okay to grasp at what you see there. But when you grasp at something that is not there, then I think it's really adding suffering. But we do this a lot. And I think often we do this also in meditation. That actually when you meditate, I would say generally there are two meditators. There is the one which is sitting there, and then there is the one that should be there. The perfect one, with no thought, no pain, no problem. And you're constantly comparing with the perfect one, instead of creatively engaging with the real one, the one that is there. So in a way, often we actually grasp at what should be there. And so in a way, if we do this, then we cannot really creatively engage with what is there. In daily life, I think it's interesting to use this creative engagement when you are in town, when you look at shops. This is interesting shops. Woo! I love this! You know? To notice, to see the movement, and to see how we exaggerate. Ooh, really, yes, I need this yesterday. It's interesting. Another interesting, which I think this is the hardest place where you can meditate and creatively engage, is with watching TV. Watching TV, you watch TV. Can you really creatively engage with it? This is interesting, especially when you watch the news. Watching the news, I think, is a good one. But talk more about this later on. Then you have audio contact, auditory. You have ears, you hear sound. And in a way, what do we do with sound? Can we, again, just hear the sound? And that's why tomorrow I will introduce listening meditation. And I will mention, because this is a retreat, so we can experiment, to try to listen without naming the sound. To just listen to the sound as sound. And you will generally find this quite difficult. Because generally, birds, medicine, cars, kitchen, whatever it is. But can you try to listen to the sound just as it appears, without saying anything about it? And I remember once I was in France, and I was wanting to work in the garden, and then somebody was going to break some concrete base we did not need anymore, and so came with a big machine, a pneumatic drill. And it was really noisy. But what I did was to go inside the sound. And it was not noisy. It was just this amazing sound. And I was not bothered whatsoever. Very interesting. If you go inside the sound, even really powerful, you can have a very different relationship. And another thing that happens in France, we live in the countryside and it's very beautiful. And then we have this beautiful terrace and we can be in the sun, very nice. And then we have a neighbor. And he seems to want to learn to be a DJ. But a DJ of garage music. So boom, 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 you know, this kind of thing. And so at the beginning it was kind of like, what's going on? Because it's very loud. And again, I tried to creatively engage with it. So in a way, when it happens, I quite enjoy it. I'm just with it as it is. And when it stops, I'm quite happy too. So in a way, to be with it, to kind of not grasp or reject, just be with it as it is. But what is also interesting with sound is words. Words, I think. We hear. We listen to words. And what do we do? And it's very likely that you sit in meditation, you are in silence, nobody is saying anything to you, and you sit there and you think, 5 years ago, that person said that to me. How could they? You know, something you heard 5 years ago. And what are sounds? They just arise and pass away. Recently I had a kind of a friend who wanted to talk, and I said, yes, you know, we talked, and then she was saying, oh, I've really had this trouble, and I really, whenever I go into the washing room, I'm really stressed. And I said, but what happened? She said, well, my husband said something, I was really upset, and whenever I go into the room, I think of it. And I said, oh, really, you know? And I said, but when did he say it? I mean, like 2 weeks ago? Thinking, you know, he said it recently, you know, how can they work together about this? I said, oh, no, he said it a year ago. So since a year, every time she goes into the washing room, she thinks about what he said. And she's very upset. Instead of, in a way, creatively engaging with when he said it, how can we work with this? So in a way, when you grasp, in a way, you keep something which just arose and in a way passed away. But you did not let it pass away. That is, in a way, what I would call the influence of words. And that's why I think news, watching the news is interesting. Or listening to somebody. I remember when somebody came for lunch, and the whole time she said that thing about a common friend. At the beginning of the meal, I had no problem with that common friend. By the end of the meal, I was starting to have trouble with that friend, but he had not done anything to me. And in a way, to see how when we grasp at what somebody said to us, we can really be influenced by it. And I think in a way too, how can I creatively engage with what I am listening to? Then there is a nose and there is smell. And here we can actually, this is a very good place. Because we sit in meditation, especially in the morning, and then we have all these smells from the kitchen. And what do you do with it? Sounds like, yes, I think it will be nice today. Oh, this is a little weird. You know, what is it, cooking? You know, how can we just smell it? Can we just be with the smell itself? Another thing near here is that sometimes we have these wafts of the cow manure. Because there is lots of cow over there, and then sometimes, you cannot, cow manure. And what do we do with it? Do we just smell it as something that arrives and will pass away? Or do we, well, really, you know, they could have chosen a better place to sit and whatever. Or maybe you have wonderful association with cow manure. Oh, I want to go there. I want to be closer to the cow. So in a way, what do? Can we just know it, experience it, as it arrives, as it passes away? For myself, one of my practice is in airports. Because I cannot wear perfume. I am allergic to perfume. But when I go into airports, I really love perfume. I think, all the perfume counter. And so this is my practice, to just smell it. Just totally be with it. And not be kind of, I'll try this one, I'll try that one. Just to smell it as it is. Or there is the tongue, then we have the taste. So, in a way, you have the food here, and you have something tasty. Generally what happens? You're on retreat, the last thing that you have as enjoyment left is the food. So you go in there, and this looks good. So, and then you taste it. And, this is weird. But how can I get rid of it? I mean, this is generally relatively automatic. Or if it's nice, you put some on your plate just to check it first, just in case. So you taste it. And, this is nice. I want more. So you check. And there is some left. And people don't, that one is taking too much. You know, I should have more for myself. But can we just be present to the taste, to the color, the taste of the food. I think, you know, each meal is an opportunity to creatively engage with food. What is our relationship to food? Let it be something we like, that's something we don't like so very much. How can we be with it? What do we do? What do we add to the experience? What is interesting with food is that then we can see a type of grasping which is very interesting, what I call grasping at newness. And this we can know when you've not eaten something in a long time, you know, your favorite dish. And it happened to me, I had not eaten couscous for 10 years, having been a nun in Korea. Then I go to France, and there was this restaurant. And I go and I have some couscous, and it was fantastic. It was the best meal ever in my life. So, of course, I want to repeat the experience. So I go the next day to the same place, exactly the same couscous. It was okay. But it was not, wow, this is fantastic. Because it was not new anymore. And often I think what we grasp is that the excitement of the new. So something becomes old very quickly, then we have to have the next new thing. And actually, I think this is also something which happens in meditation. You have a new experience. You feel quiet or clear or whatever. And it's amazing. But then, it might happen again. But it will not necessarily be amazing in the same way because you already have experienced it. So you know it. So now to be careful of when do we grasp at newness and when this in a way stops us for creatively engaging for what is really happening, new or old. Then there is a body and tactile sensation. And I think this is in the way what you did today. How to be aware of bodily sensation, that it be pleasant one, or that it be unpleasant one. What do we do with sensation? Can we creatively engage with them? And to me, this is, once I was on a retreat, this month's retreat, and within 3 days, I mean, I was so happy to do this retreat, and it was great, and I was very enthusiastic, and within 3 days, I was very ill with my stomach. And so there was 27 days with this pain in the stomach. And I thought, no, 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 don't future, just stay present to it as it arises. And to me, what was very interesting throughout the 27 days is that sometimes it would be there, and sometimes it would not be there at all. And then it would be there again. And then over time, I found what I could do to make it less and what made it worse. And I was able to do the 27 days. So in a way to see, how can I creatively engage? Instead of exaggerating or proliferating with it, how can I be with the sensation in that moment? How can I creatively engage and creatively respond? Because this creative engagement is not indifference. It is really saying, what can I do there? And in terms of you here, I know a few of you have pain sitting there. And what interests me a lot is why you don't sit on chairs. I can guarantee it's much better on chairs. But it's interesting, you know. You have to sit on the floor, even if it's painful. I mean, you're free to sit on the floor, no problem. But in a way to see, you know, how do I creatively engage with the pain? Because often there is this idea, I must go beyond the pain. But I think sometimes it is good that the pain is not there, but actually having an easier posture, like sitting on a chair. So you know, to how do I engage with sensations in my body? Then there are thoughts. And this is very important, to see that we come in contact with thought. This is the same process, that often we have this feeling that thoughts are there all the time, and that we are our thoughts. But like something we see, something we hear, thoughts arise. 1 minute I don't have this thought, next minute I have it. This I think is very important. I think meditation can help us to see thoughts which have a reason. That it's not continuous. We're not thinking always the same thing. We're thinking all kind of different things. And so in a way, creatively engaging is saying, what am I thinking? So in a way, first, to be in contact properly, to see what is it I think. So in a way, to notice, before you come back to the breath, what is it? Where was I? What was I thinking about? For myself, something I realized was that I used to have this, what I call, luggage thinking. I would be, you know, watching the breath or doing whatever, and suddenly I would go into preparing my luggage. But like, you know, 6 months ahead, you know, South Africa or wherever, you know. I go to Israel, what should I take? You know, 6 months ahead. But now I know it, so I say, oh, luggage. I don't need to do it now, you know, especially if it's 6 months ahead. But you see, what is it I'm thinking? Do I need to think this now? Because you see, if we grasp at a thought, and this I think is very painful, if we grasp at a thought, we reduce to that thought. So everything we are just becomes this one firing of the neuron. And once I experienced this, which really showed it to me directly, I had trouble with certain administration thing in France, and then I came out feeling really hopeless, thinking, this is hopeless, I am hopeless, everything is hopeless. And just to be caught grasping at this thought made me paralyzed. I was immobile on the pavement, and everybody having to avoid me. until I kind of say, wait a minute, is this true? And I thought, no, I can read, I can write, I should be able to deal with this form, this was problem with four formulas. And in a way, this is, if we grasp, we reduce ourselves. If we creatively engage, we question, we look, is this true? Is this always true? Can I look at this in a different way? Can I engage with this in a different way? And at that level, I think it's important to see with thought that actually I would say there are three different levels of thought that we can see relatively clearly in meditation. This is what I call the intense level, the habitual level, and the light level. And I think we need to deal differently with these different levels. Intense level is when something has happened, and you really go, and you go round and round and round and round, and you can't get out. You just go round and round. And I think there the only thing to do is to see, this has happened because something happened. I am not always obsessed. But generally, we obsess about something because something sudden, beautiful or terrible has happened. And to see, okay, this has happened because of this condition. This is normal. This is my reaction to this. And at the same time to try to create a space and to say, let it go just for a second. Let me go back to the breath, to the body. Then you go again. Then with intention, I think the only thing we can do is create small spaces until the intensity of it will diminish of its own. And then we can be more creatively engaged with it. Then you have the habitual type. And this is all the planning, the ruminating, the daydreaming, the judging, the comparing, counting. I mean, you do all kinds of things, which we also do in our daily life. And in a way to see when it's a habit, it fixes us. But if we can come back to the breath, to come back to the moment, then we diminish the power, then it can come back to a function. You can plan when you want, you can think about something when you want. So to see, when is it like this planning? You know, like, if you plan, I would recommend to see how repetitive it is. And so I would say, you plan five times, count five times, now it's enough, you know, till another next 2 days, and then another five times. You know, you don't need to plan 100 times the same thing, because you cannot be very repetitive. And then the light thought, you just train the thought. You kind of start to think of Aunt Olga, and then you end up in New York, and you have no idea how you got there. You kind of just go from here to there. And it's very light. And just to see, this is the brain doing its thing. Just seeing it. And then gently coming back again and again, seeing. That's what I do. I don't need to be caught in it. But if you want to consider it, of course, you can. So, of course, also, when you sit in meditation, you can have what I would call an insight. You can see something very clearly. And so you can explore it for a while and then see when you start to repeat to yourself the good insight you've had. Then you can let go. Because if you have the insight, you really have seen something. You don't need to repeat it to yourself so you remember it. If it's a real one, it will be there. Same as a good idea. You sit in meditation, and often that's where you have your best idea in meditation. You know, as I'm a writer, often I have this wonderful idea in meditation. I sit there. But I know I can go a little with it, but generally when I go back to my daily life, I will use it very differently. So I just play with it a bit and then back to the breath, to the moment. So to see, we can also play with what happens in our mind. So in a way, the problem is not with the contact or with the function of thinking, seeing, hearing, but with the grasping. Do we grasp? Do we reduce? Do we exaggerate? Do we proliferate? And so in a way, how can we creatively engage so that we can creatively respond to what we come in contact with? Then there is feeling. So you have the contact, and generally there is a feeling. Pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. And what do you do with this feeling? This is, and to me, this is a test of accomplishment. I will not say for me the test of accomplishment is how great is your meditative state. Well, if you have great meditative state, fine. Wonderful. My test would be, how are you? When something is pleasant, when something is unpleasant, when something is neutral. When something is pleasant, we generally grasp at it. Woo! I like this. I want more. I want to repeat it. You know, you have a good weekend with friends. Wonderful time. And then when they leave, you say, let's do this again. So we experience exactly the same pleasure. But we cannot reproduce it. Because there will be different condition, different pleasure, different happiness. In the same way, often we grasp at the idea of what would be pleasant. And that, I think, is very, again, create lots of suffering. So we don't see what is pleasant, what is pleasant in this moment, but we think, if only I did not have this pain in the knee, then really I could meditate. If only I had this, then really I would be happy. So in a way we're grasping at something pleasant which is not there. And always comparing our life to what should be. Again, it's back to that. And in a way to be careful there, that I think it's very important that we be joyful, we be happy, but at the same time to be present to already the joy we have, the happiness we have now, and not to be caught in a future happiness, a future joy, but present to the one which is happening now. And so to be aware, to me this is very, in a way, one of the gifts of meditation. To really be present to when we are fine, when we are okay, when we are happy, to know it. Because then we know we can be joyful, we can be happy. We're not always unhappy. To really inhabit that experience. And I would say this is creatively engaging with what is pleasant. Knowing it will not last forever, but it is there now. And I can be with it, I can be present to it. And with the unpleasant, what do we do? Something is unpleasant. Well, I don't want it. I want to push it away. I want somebody else to have it. This is interesting. When we are ill, often what is our first reaction? Why me? But when you say, why me, you say, why isn't this happening to somebody else? Anyway, to say this is what is happening. This arose upon certain conditions. And in a way, how can I deal with it? How can I not make it bigger than it is? Not exaggerate, not proliferate? How can I be with this suffering? And I remember once I was in Sweden, leading a retreat, a Zen retreat, and I had quite a lot of problem with my sciatica then. And so we do this walking we do in Korean Zen, which is relatively fast walking for 10 minutes. And then I come and sit, and it was so painful. It was excruciating. I never had such pain in my life. It was so painful. It was throbbing. It was, and then I had to sit for 35 minutes. Because I was doing the bell, so I could not leave. I could see that if I thought, I cannot stand this, this is terrible, I would not last the 30 minutes. So instead, I went into it. I really went into the leg, into the sensation, not exaggerating, not proliferating, just being with the experience itself. And by doing that, I was able to be with the 30 minutes, no problem. It actually passed quite fast. And then I rang the bell, and then I went to take some painkiller. So awareness doesn't mean you don't creatively respond to the pain and do something about it. You don't just say, pain, pain, pain. You know, you see it, but you also do something about it. I think this is very important. also with the unpleasant, what we do is often we are grasping at the fear of what will be unpleasant in the future. And we create lots of pain that way. I had a friend who, his whole life, all adult life, 30 years, was really afraid that something bad would happen to someone he loved. And he thought, if that person dies, my life is finished. My life will fall apart. And so, always at the back of his mind, there was this fear. What if something happened to that person? I'm not going to cope. This is going to be so terrible. And so you always had that tension. And then once I saw him, and he was a little strange. He looked a little kind of really confused, really kind of really bewildered. And I said, what's the matter? And he said, well, that person died. And I am okay. I am totally okay. For 30 years I was afraid this would happen. And I am fine. And he was just kind of like, why was I so afraid? So in a way, to see, sometimes we grasp again at not unpleasantness now, but of the future. And we actually create a lot of suffering with that. Instead of, in a way, creatively engaging with what is in the present, what is now. Then there is what is called mutual feeling. You know? And this is interesting. Our relationship to mutual feeling. Not pleasant, not unpleasant. And I think this is a lot of what we experience when we sit in meditation. But we have a big association with mutual feelings, with boredom. Nothing is happening. Nothing is going on. I am not existing. Nobody is seeing me, or whatever it is. And so, and then we nearly become like my niece, who is 8 years old, and comes to me, I am bored! You know, and I say, what about this? What about that? I am bored! Like, you know, this is the worst thing that could happen to her, to be bored. But to me, when nothing is happening, this is great. We don't have to be busy, we don't have to do anything. We can just rest. How can we creatively engage with nothing going on? How can we rest in it? Just say, oh, I am alive in that moment. I can just be. I can meditate. Excellent opportunity to meditate if nothing is happening. Instead of, I am bored. Something must happen. So in a way, how through the meditation, how can we play with this grasping? The meditation is not about the grasping will go overnight. This is again not that. But how can we see the process of grasping? How can we see the exaggeration, the proliferation? And how can we start to think more in terms of how can I creatively engage? What would it mean to do that? So not that we never grasp again. We have too many opportunities to grasp. But how can we grasp less? How can we play with this contact, with this feeling? And in that way, how can we be more creatively engaged with ourselves, with the world, with people? And I'd like to finish with just a small story about Ajahn Chah. Ajahn Chah was this great Thai master who is dead now. And that's what happened in Thailand. All these high monks, they're given lots of objects that they don't need. You go into an abbot place and there is a Rolex watch and kind of, you know, golf cane, I mean, all kind of really weird things, you know. People give it to them because they renunciate, so people do that. So one day there is this young American who goes to see Ajahn Chah, and on the table in front of Ajahn Chah there is this beautiful glass, beautiful. And the young American said, but how come you're renunciate? How come you're using this beautiful glass? And Ajahn Chah said, well, I use it because it's there. And I also appreciate its beauty. But I know, for me, this glass is already broken. So I do not grasp at it. I just see it, I use it, but I know it is not permanent. I don't, my happiness does not depend on this glass remaining a certain way. So, this is what I wanted to say today. Are there any questions or comments? You see, to me, what is interesting is that if you meditate and you don't focus on the thought as such, but you notice what goes on when you become distracted, over time, you can notice the texture of the thought. Sometimes the thoughts are gooey, very seductive, like daydreaming. Daydreaming is a perfect one. If I had, I don't know, if I won the lottery, if I had the perfect partner, if I was awakened, and you go into this beautiful daydream. Well, you see, you can see, it's very abstract. Or, if you, sometimes if you are afraid, you can see, feel the contraction. There is some trembling. Or, if it's repetitive, notice, when you tell yourself, you know, if you say, I'm right, they're wrong, I'm right, they're wrong. Or notice the language, notice what is going on in... one thing I can... notice the effect of the thought. There are certain words which really get us going. For example, one. When you start to think, this is unfair. I don't think you can be neutral thinking that. As soon as you think, this is unfair, you really, off you go, you know. The world, and you know, I used to do that and say to Stephen, this is unfair. He used to look at me and say, is the world a fair place? And it's not. But I mean, of course, it's nice if things are balanced and everything. But see, you see, what are the words? Because thoughts are in words. So what are the words that get you going? Is it when you have a thought, is it spacious? Is it creative? Is it kind of, in a way, moving? Seeing, is it moving? Is it compassionate? Is it wise? Is it intelligent? Or is it repetitive? Is it fixing you? Is it tense? But in a way, we need to be more aware. In order to start to see. And you can, and it becomes like actually nearly physical. You can feel it. It's kind of a whole body-mind thing. And you can see over time where this is going to lead you. This is interesting. Over time you know, if I go that way, I mean, you make the choice. If I go that way, this is not going to be so good. Does that make... Yes.
Questions with me, I wonder about like fairness, for example, like our willing, my willingness to the fact about myself at a certain moment, or about the world, about others, and like, I mean, it does seem in the way that you're teaching and all the other Vipassana teachers is that there is a big willingness to look at unpleasant things if they arise, anyway. So unfairness is. You know, often, I mean, it diminishes us all.
But
so, that's my question, really.
But do you grasp at it, or do you creatively engage with it? You see, I totally agree. I, too, generally try to be fair, because I think this is important, to be fair, to be kind, to be open, to be wise, etc. No, I think this fairness. But at the same time, we have to be careful when we make it absolute. You know, I must always be fair. everything must always be fair, because then we bump into reality, which sometimes is not. Then of course we can try to see how can I make the world a better place, as Stephen was saying, a place where it's more fair. Of course, if we value that, we will try to do that. But to me, the difference is seeing it is not absolute, but it's something we which one engage with and try to creatively be with it. Yes?
Trying to recommend, how is your teaching now going with cases where you take on yourself commitment, a strong commitment that even maybe cost him his life?
Mm-hmm.
And how is your teaching going with this? Because I tried to work on your teaching, it took to me like to help me to not to avoid this commitment, but I know that in the Buddhist culture, people take their life for commitment very easily, rather than
No, no, I would, you know, this is another talk, which I would say about faith, about courage. This is another talk. Because, you see, let's take the commitment to peace. You committed to peace. So, you can grasp at it, and you can actually attack somebody for not being peaceful. Which, to me, is a little problematic. Or you can creatively engage with peace is an important part of your life. You want to be a peaceful person. You want to be engaged in situation if you possible can make it more peaceful. I mean, I remember I was in a town in England and I was talking to two friends of mine who were about my build, about a little younger than me. And suddenly we heard some noise. And we look, and there were these two guys, 20-ish, fighting. One picking the other up. And we looked at each other and we said, this can't go on. So the three of us, not thinking, you know, they could beat us up too, we went and said, you can't do this. You know, this is not the right way to do it. And they stopped. Yeah, and I think, yes, in a way, this is, to me, meditation. This creative engagement generally helps us actually to be more compassionate, but creatively wise and compassionate with the world, to kind of have a commitment to that. And of course, this can, you could have what I would call a heroic compassion, where you, regardless of your own life, you might decide to do something because this is so important for you. Or you can try to do it a different way. I think there are so many different ways. There are also so many different types of what I would call courage. But yes, courage is a very important quality that generally, you know, one would hope to cultivate. Let it be in meditation, let it be in our life, let it be the way. To me, the creative engagement make us see. First, we grasp less at ourselves. Then we grasp less at the image we have of people, then we can more creatively engage with them where they are at. Instead of fixing. To me, the talk tonight is about fixing. How do we fix? And if we fix, generally we reduce our potential. If we don't fix, generally there will be more potential. And of course within that, there can be courage, there can be faith, there can be commitment. Yes?
I was thinking today about the boredom thing. Because, and then today I really found myself trying to go back to the old kind of stuff. I thought, oh, what bothers you? There's something really bothering you. All kind of, you can judge comments, judgment, boring things. So I thought, okay, I'd look at that. What is it? What am I doing? And then I found that it's like a cover, like a top, like okay, if I drop them, then there'll be nothing. So it was like a dead end, because like you said before, Stephen, if the brain functions, you can't stop it, and they just come.
At the same time, you can see it is not always like this to the same level. You see, this is, I think, what is important. Of course, you can experience time in meditation, but then you would have to sit for a month in silence and really do it, 10 hours a day, and I can nearly guarantee you that at some point you will not have any thought. But you will still be conscious, but you won't have thought, because there is nothing, you know, to think about for a month. You know, you nearly thought everything there was to think of. There is no juice anymore, and this kind of like, you know, all this meditation. So you can have no thought. I have experienced that. And, I mean, it's quite nice. It's quite relaxing. But I think you need very specific conditions for this to arise and for this
but
to...
But then, when I looked at it, I thought, well, I'm so bored, because it just, the thoughts are boring.
Yeah, but this is the thing. You know, this is a judgment. It's thought. You see, I think we, when we sit, I have the feeling, but I think everybody, we have to pass through this stage where we think we should get a certain something in meditation. Personally, when I sit, I just sit. And sometimes it is very stable, very open, very quiet, clear. Sometimes I just, you know, think of my luggage or I don't know what, you know. So, just, you know, and I say, oh, yes, like that. And I, you know, I come back, but it's not like, you must come back. It's just, this is what's going on. So personally, I don't see it as boring. I just see, that's what's happening. But because in a way, I don't have any great expectation of anything happening. I mean, if it happens, fine. But if it doesn't happen, this is, I'm still meditating. I think often we have to be careful of our expectation. I think often the boredom is in comparison to something who possibly should be otherwise. Because, in a way, what is the most amazing in this moment, as we sit here, is that we are alive. That we can hear, we can see, we can feel. This is amazing. I mean, to me, this is what is amazing, that we are bored. You see, billions of years of evolution. And I mean, it was hard work, this evolution, from these tiny little things and, you know, going through all these things and, you know, and finally it ends up in us so that we are bored. This, I think, is a little... I mean... quand même, on dirait en français. But it's interesting to look, and at the same time, you can tell yourself, well, you know, I am a result of billions of years of evolution, and still, I am bored, like my niece, you know, I am bored. But, in a way, can we creatively engage with that boredom? We just do thoughts. We can't always have an heroic thought, or an amazing thought. But personally, I think, yeah, as I said before, I think it's great you have thought. It means your neurons are functioning. Good. They're not, you know. I spent a lot of time with my grandmother. And she died when she was 93. And I really saw what happened sometime when we age and how all the functions go. And that really showed me, you know, to appreciate what we have when we have it. To really see, I'm lucky that I can think now. Because you have no idea when you will be able to do that and for how long.
Problem with grasping the way you use it, the term would be fixing, really. Because grasping has the association of patience behind it.
And it's not always motivation. I mean, I think what you really find is that we give meaning to things, and we live under the illusion that this is the only meaning that we can give them. And what is important is to be flexible and meaning. But it's not always motivation to stay with this meaning that stands behind.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, I use the word grasping in English. A word to try to show, but yes, it is actually fixing and identifying at the same time. I mean, it's many different things. So of course, if you prefer to use the term fixing, I think it's for each of us, you know, I use a word like grasping, and then each of you has to interpret it in their experience in a way which resonates. So at the moment, this is a word I choose. I mean, I might change it. It just, you know, depends what I can use at any given moment. But yes, I think everybody has to internalize and see, what does it mean for me, this? How do I do this? And how can I make sense of it in myself, that process of fixing, of identifying, of reducing? I think this is the main point of reducing this exaggeration, the proliferation. How can I look at it? How can I make it meaningful to me? Behind somebody? Yeah?
I'm not exactly clear for myself, so I might be confused. Because I have the tendency to be very deportive anyway. And when I do this creative engagement, I feel like I just intensify it. Not only when I creatively engage with thoughts, but also when I creatively engage with sounds or taste or tactile sensation or whatever, I feel like not only I'm talkative, you know, anyway, inside my head. I'm on top of it, I'm also, I don't know, sometimes this creative engagement is really peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
And it creates this spaciousness that you talk about. Sometimes I feel it's very strong, but sometimes I feel it's just intensified this discourse,
and then I would recommend to come back to something simpler, to just let go of all these whatever ideas, just come back to something very simple, like the breath or one sound, and not do anything special with it. Just, and this is a problem, but not even think of not doing anything special with it. I mean, you know, this is a problem with instruction. You can just go. But in a way, do something which, to see when it seems to buzz. Then, just in a way, what is it that can help you? I think each of us has to find, what is it that helps me? Is it to come back to the body? Is it, you see, I think we each have to find ways like that. And it can be different with everybody. So in a way to see, when he goes into this, or to just be with the agitation, you know, just to be with that. How does it feel? How can I be with that? In a way which does not increase it, but in a way contains it, is with it. I think I'll talk a little more about this when I will introduce feeling. Yes. Behind first.
I wanted to ask you about the whole way of using acceptance. Like I see myself grasping, so then I say, oh no, I'm grasping now, so I should really engage with this, and I'm grasping in this way and that way, and then I should engage in creative thinking about it, and so. It's like I'm trying to change myself all the time, then I feel like it can be a trap of judging and trying to change and things like that. And so how would acceptance come into this whole process?
Well, you see, to me, I think this is the two aspects of creative engagement. To me, to just accept something as it is, this is also to creatively engage with it. You see, often we see, when we hear creative, we think we have to do something. Not necessarily. to be creative means that we let our potential arise in the moment instead of fixing. So for me, there is these two aspects to the creative engagement. One is just to accept, just to know and to accept, to be with. And next, to see, do I need to creatively respond to this or just to be with it? So there can be these two movements. Behind and then in front.
I find that when I'm really grasping at something, particularly when I'm angry, I'm very stupid and very scared. So even if I see that what I'm doing is wrong and pointless, it's very hard for me to come up with an alternative. And it's very frightening to stop doing what I'm doing, which at least I know I'm familiar with. So I'm wondering if you have any kind of simple advice that might serve in a moment like that.
I would say to cultivate stability and openness. This to me, I think this is the only thing we can do. To cultivate being stable, but really like the whole being, feeling that, especially like in the belly, feeling stability. I think that's what we cultivate when we sit. This kind of integrating this stability. You just feel stable, but also open. So in a way, you have trust in yourself. So that when you go into the situation, you think, let's see what happens. I will bring to this situation everything I have in this moment. And to in a way start from that stability, that openness, but it's not just a thought, it's a physical thing. And you go with that, and then you will see what happens. Personally, in some way, I would say it's better to be angry than to be resentful. Because anger, you can see what you do, as you said. It's generally, we are stupid, and it's not very helpful, but it's good to see, I said this, I did this, this was not helpful. But then to think, how could I have said it differently? If I feel strongly about something, how can I say this differently? How can I approach this differently? But I don't think not to be, to decide I must not be angry is not useful. Then you become resentful, which will come out later. But to feel the anger, that's what the feeling meditation will be about. How can I be with feeling? That it be sadness, that it be anger, whatever it is. To have feelings is normal. To feel anger is normal. But then the problem is when it becomes disturbing emotion. So what is it that will help me to be with the feeling as it is, so that it doesn't become such a disturbing emotion? And then one has to do different things, I feel. But first to know it. To know it, to really know, what do I do? How do I feel? How do I act? What do I say? When do I... Very likely often to see the condition. When you are tired, you're more likely to be irritable and angry. When you're not tired, you might be much better. So to look at everything inside but also outside. But this is a big subject. I might look at it at some point. And that's the last one. Because we have to stop. I don't. You see the thing?
No, but I'm actually I understand religious commitment. That's an easier concept. Commitment. Where does one get the discipline, the drive, the commitment to go through hours and hours?
But because of faith. You see, there is three important qualities when we meditate. There is faith. Faith in yourself, faith in your potential, faith in the value for myself. It will be wisdom and compassion. This is my bottom line, wisdom and compassion. And I want to develop it. Since a very young age, I wanted to develop that. And meditation is the way I found to develop it. So in a way, to me, you see, I sat 10 hours a day in Korea, but I was not bored. I just sat there. You see, because I have faith. I have faith in my potential, I have faith in wisdom and compassion, in my ability to develop it, in meditation helping me to develop that, and also the courage to do it. Okay, for myself, and this has to be fast because we have to walk a little. When I was young, as you, I told already, I wanted to save the world. Year 11. Then I wanted to become the president of the republic and all this thing. Then I dropped that, then I was an anarchist. I wanted still to save the world. That was my top thing. Then I realized, reading actually a passage in a Buddhist book, that before I wanted to change others, maybe I should change myself first. Because I realized that I was very idealistic. I did not want to be jealous, I did not want to be egoist, I did not want to be angry. And I could not stop myself from doing that. That's when I realized, just thinking about it is not, doesn't work. I could tell myself, don't be jealous. Would not work. So I thought, I dropped politics, something like that. And then I thought maybe meditation would be the solution. That I could, you know, work on myself. And it works. So yeah, maybe I would say, I sit because it works. This would be the bottom line. Why I sit here is because it works.
But what about the war?
Huh?
What about the war?
The war?
The war. They have not taken the war.
Oh, saving the world. It has really gone down. Come down. So what now? What I try to do is to be kind and compassionate to people around me, to my family, to my neighbor, to people I encounter, in whatever I can help. I mean, anyway, I won't go into that. But, you know, when, I might talk about it at some point, but when it seems I can help in any way in terms of compassion, then I try to do that. But yes, I have dropped the idea of saving the world, definitely, because I think it was a little over the top. But of course, if the world is saved, I'm very happy. And if other people do it, I'm very happy. And I will applaud if they do it in a creative way. Thank you very much. We have to stop. And you have, I'm sorry, just 15 minutes of walking meditation before the final sit.